Hey dear Mark, what have you got for us today?
All right. How are you doing, Cam? You okay? Hope all
I'm
our
good.
listeners are good as well. We've got a few things to talk about today, haven't we? We've got some great news for Canon mirrorless users. We've got some good tech, some good strengthening on SD cards. We also want to discuss what makes a photo, but first, we've got some good news in Japan, haven't we?
Yeah, we have actually, and it's to do with the camera market in that it's grown for the first time in 13 years in Japan, because it's been in decline since 2010. So I think that's good news. I think part of the story really has got to do with the, do you remember the microchip, the shortage of microchip
Yes.
supply issues after COVID? I think
Yeah.
that,
Well, it
I
was
mean
during
that.
COVID and after COVID, wasn't it? It was, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think there was a shortage for everything, wasn't there, for all electronic products. So this might have something to do with it. But I picked this up from Digital Camera World. Always like to sort of give a shout out to where we see news stories and where sometimes things come directly to us. Sometimes we research stuff. And so I'm going to read little bits of the article directly, so we sort of get it right. And it was published by the Japanese financial newspaper Nikkei Shimbun. And the newspaper reports that the country's digital camera market is in the green for the first time in over a decade. And with new flagship releases from Nikon, Sony, and Fujifilm, to Japan's domestic digital camera market has slowly recovered after the pandemic. And research from Tokyo firm GfK Japan shows that this is now on the upswing. And
Okay.
so there's been a general 7% increase, which I
Oh, that's
think
good.
is pretty promising.
That's good news because it was looking a bit ropey when Nikon left Japan and all that kind of stuff. So it's good news and good to see that the technology in that area is on the up.
And they also go on to say that compact cameras grew by 6%,
Really?
and it says also, yeah, that's right, yeah. So it's but this thing is, Mark, there's a whole world of sort of hobbyists, amateur photographers, just your general people that just want to buy a camera, and I guess a lot of them
Yeah, I
immediately will go
guess.
for, so we I was going to say something compact. Yeah, so
Yeah,
a compact
got
camera,
my camera.
something small.
Yeah, you often think that phones just take over from that, don't you? I've always thought that. I mean, I don't have a compact camera anymore because I've got my phone. But yeah, no, well,
Exactly.
excellent stuff. Excellent
Yeah,
stuff.
it surprises me actually, because I do find compact cameras quite fiddly to use, actually, trying to get into their menu system if you really want to use it. But I have a feeling that a lot of compact camera users just put it into auto and don't really fiddle about with it, which is not really the point of those compact cameras, as compact cameras do have a lot of features in built in. But also, it goes on to say that the sales increase is, and it sounds quite obvious when you hear it, is also increased because of the demand in travel. We're back travel, after the
Yeah.
pandemic, so, and leisure and all of that, and it's all going to it's increased. And a lot of people who had these cameras during COVID, or had time during COVID, had time to get out their cameras that they hadn't used for ages, got back into taking pictures, got back into it, and thought, oh, this is great and whatever, and suddenly start to look a little bit more at what's out there, what's new and stuff. And so I think there's been a lot of reasons for that as well. But also, it's not just the cameras that have seen that increase as well. That upturn, interchangeable lenses also grew by 4%, and Sigma of with providing and more affordable lenses as well than maybe say Nikon or Canon. Their sales increase went up as well. So I think it's a good news story to start off with, isn't it?
Excellent. Well, that probably leads us straight on to our next thing that we want to talk about. You
It
mentioned
does.
Sigma there. We said we got some great news for Canon mirrorless users, and it is the fact that Canon have now given the green light to third-party lens manufacturers such as Sigma and Tamron to produce their EF, sorry, not EF, RF lenses. I knew I was going to say the wrong amount
That's
there.
right, yeah. But Mark, that which is great news. However, it is for the APS-C cameras.
Oh,
That's
is
really what it's
it?
for. It is, yes. Okay,
Ah,
so
I see. Serves
when
me
you
right
sort
for
of,
just reading the headlines, doesn't
well, actually,
it?
that was a good that was glad you sort of said it like that, because it says Sigma has announced it will release Canon RF mount options to six of its APS-C contemporary lenses.
Okay.
Okay, so it doesn't seem as if it's going to the full mirrorless range, which is a shame, but I think it's going to come. I think
It will
Canon,
come. Yeah,
it has to come, you know. And so that is good news, because, you know, Sigma is some of the best lenses that you can get, and they are sort of, you know, they're very, very sort of competitive for price, you know, and a lot of people do buy them because of the price difference. And, you know, between buying a native lens, you know, like a Nikon lens for a Nikon camera, or a Canon lens for a Canon camera. So people do like Tamron, they, you know, and they do like Sigma, because I think they're the two of the makes, unless I'm mistaken, to have been around the longest, or the two most obvious makes, aren't they?
They are the two obvious ones. So yeah, Tamron and Sigma. I think, I mean, Tokina as well. That's another.
Oh, Tokina's another one. That's right. Yeah. It goes on to say that the news that Canon is slowly opening up, and let's say opening up the RF mount to other AF lenses will be exciting to Canon users, as it provides more price points and creative options. And Tamron has also just released a statement announcing the new development of an RF lens, which will also be for the APS-C range of cameras as well. It says there's no news as to whether the license agreement between the lens manufacturers and Canon is limited to APS-C, which may be the case, or it may be that already established APS-C lenses are the quickest to add mount options. So it looks like we're getting those first for the APS-C, but it's a step in the right direction, and let's applaud Canon for that. Okay, we'll be a little bit slow.
Well, I guess in some respects as well, it makes sense as far as the target market's concerned. I'd imagine there are more people out there that have the APS-C mounts than the full frame mounts, I guess. I know as professionals, we're always on about full frame and all that kind of stuff because of what we do. But that's because it's our job. There are more people, I reckon, who own a camera than there are professionals out there. So I'd imagine, actually, monetary wise, because also the casual user wouldn't necessarily want to spend that extra £1,000 on a lens like us professionals would. So actually, when you think about it as a marketing strategy or a business strategy, it makes complete sense, because you got the most users with APS-C, I'd imagine. I mean, I don't have any stats for that, by the way. I'm just sort of guessing. But also, they're the people with the APS-C cameras who wouldn't necessarily want to spend the premium price that you would for a Canon lens.
Well, exactly. That's right. Yeah. And when people are price conscious, and that they, you know, want to still get, you know, the focal length of the lens they need and the aperture that they need, you know, Sigma is a great option. I think, you know, I've spoken to some people say, oh, no, I'd always buy a Canon lens, always buy a Nikon. Oh, you don't want, you know, no, I feel confident with it. But honestly, the Sigma lenses are so good, and Tamron as well. I've got experience with Sigma lenses, not Tamron, firsthand. I had a great Sigma lens for Nikon D750 when I was using that. Mm. And that was such a good lens, and I loved that lens.
I'd be interesting to see how well they focus in comparison to your RF lens, because, I mean, your RF lens outdoes my EF lens when it comes to focusing. So I'd be interested to see how Sigma or the Tamron lenses sort of compare in the speed. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will be. I actually think that they're going to be the equivalent of Canon. I think they will be just as good.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because especially with Canon lenses, I mean, because they notoriously had their motor in the lens rather than in the body. So I always, you know, their USM motor, I mean, it's always seems to be the fastest one out there. And I've never seem to remember Sigma having that USM technology in their lenses. This was back in the day when I was at Jessup, so we were talking 20 years ago. I'm not as up with my tech as I used to be because of that. But they weren't as fast from what I could tell. And I'd be interested to see if that's going to be the case now.
Yeah, I think they were, which is purely because of the quality of the lens. So great news from Canon. Now, Mark, another story that we've got, I think, is going to be of interest to pretty much every camera user, and that's for those cameras that have got SD cards.
Yes. Because... Well, my cameras have SD cards, so I'm interested. Okay. What's your news, Cam?
Okay, well, so let's go with, let's just talk about the other cards for a moment. So Nikon have their XQD cards, and I believe Canon have their, is it CF flash or something like that? They're slightly thicker. They're equivalent to XQD.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my cameras are both Canon, so the R6 is both SD, so it's dual SD, which is marvellous. My Mark III, I'm still using a Mark III, is compact flash and SD, and I think the Mark IV is compact flash and
SD. That's right, yeah. So I just remember what it is. So Canon have their CF Express cards, which is the equivalent to the XQD cards. Now, I remember when I had, I think it was a Nikon D4S, and when I went to buy that, I was shocked that this was the first time I'd heard of an XQD card, that it was a different type of card. I thought, oh, okay, no, great. Until I heard the price. I mean, the price point was ridiculous. Yeah. And they still are as well. XQD cards are so, so expensive. And I think there's CF Express for Canons are as well. Now, a lot of people say, yeah, but those cards have a huge benefit. You know, they're almost indestructible. They're great in low light. They're weatherproof and all of that. And I'll say, that's all well and good, but they're not loss proof, are they? You know, what if you lose a card? Okay. So, and that's always my main point, you know, and I think SD cards are pretty good. I think they're pretty hard wearing. I've not got any experience in sort of freezing conditions or anything like that. No. But I've never had a problem with an SD card.
Well, however, actually, can I just say, I have had problems with SD cards.
Okay, now I did say however. So what problem have you had with SD cards?
So the problem I've had with SD cards is getting them out of their case. So I've got this case. I'm not sure if it's an SD card problem or a case problem, but they seem to be so jammed in there. Getting them out sometimes is so difficult. I've actually accidentally pulled apart a card rather than getting it out. Now, I have noticed, as a colleague that we both know, who's put little felt strips underneath it so you can just pull it, which I think is a brilliant idea. And I've always been meaning to get on with that, like a ribbon, you know, so it's underneath the card and you just flick that. But yeah, you got this really safe, secure card holder, card case, but the cards fall apart when you try and take them out.
Yeah, and I've had that problem as well because they are very flimsy and you've got to be careful getting your fingers on the little, you know, the gold contacts as well because you do have to treat any type of memory card with care.
Yeah.
And I do see people, you know, I work in an environment where, you know, occasionally, you know, I'm working with a lot of photographers sometimes and, you know, they just sort of take their SD cards out, put them on a table and they're just left there. And I don't think we should do that. I think, you know, your memory card should be treated with care and respect. You know, for me personally, what I do is I will take out an SD card out of my camera, put it into my reader, download it, take it out, put it straight back into the camera or into the case. I will very, very rarely leave an SD card on a table. And if I do, I'll probably get a piece of paper and put it on a piece of paper. So it's just sitting there. You know, I'm probably over careful with it, but I don't think you can be over careful with it. Because they are flimsy. I have had problems, not many, a couple of times maybe, where I have pulled it out of a camera and it's got stuck a little bit. And I've seen that the gold contacts, the little gold bits have started to come off.
I've had
that problem as well. Now, the good news is that Lexar are looking to release some new rugged SD cards.
Okay.
And it says it's the perfect memory card for shooting in extreme environments. Yeah. .. Or if you're just clumsy. Okay. Now, when it comes to shooting in extreme environments, it wouldn't really bother me. I generally don't shoot in extreme environments. And probably most SD cards, if I do go to an extreme environment, will probably be okay. However, I can be clumsy. And I think we can all be clumsy.
Yeah.
And I think this is where the rugged SD card probably comes in. So they announced at there was the NAB 2024 show in Las Vegas. NAB, I think it's a National Association of Broadcasters. It's a big show in Vegas that happened in April. And they announced a new rugged series of SD cards, which are available in two speed classes. And they've called them the Armor Gold, okay, which is quite cool, and the Armor Silver.
Oh,
okay, the gold and the silver. And it says they're unusual in the SD sector. And I'm not quite sure as they boast an IP68 ingress protection rating. Now, I don't really know what that means, but somebody out there will. But it does say this.
It's a lot of important words to make you think that this card is indestructible. Yeah.
Okay. So it says this means the cards are sealed against dust and protected against continuous immersion in water. continuous immersion in water. Okay, most people aren't going to use it, but yeah, if you have got underwater stuff and anything, but protected against dust. And I think that's where all photographers that are listening to this, if you use SD cards, you know, do be careful with them. It says, given an SD card still has to conform to strict external dimensions, Lexar must have got quite creative when designing the necessary seals to protect the card's internals. Because my immediate thought would be, if it's a rugged card, it's going to be
bigger.
Thicker.
Yeah.
It's going to be thicker. Mm. So however they've done it, they've got to be very, very clever with this. And it says that their card should still be fast enough to support 6K video capture, which, to be honest with you, is going to be more than enough. They haven't revealed prices yet, and they probably won't be available until about the third quarter, so a little bit later in the year in 2024. Yeah. But also, in addition to that, with these rugged SD cards, and I will certainly be looking at those, they've also... releasing a new docking station. It's just targeted at professional users. It's called the Lexar Professional Pro Workflow, and it's a 6-bay dock designed to take various different modules, including modules for CF Express cards, SD, micro SD, and portable SSDs. One thing is quite interesting there. They haven't put the XQD cards in, unless the CF Express and the XQD cards are exactly the same.
Do you know what? I've never actually seen any of these cards because I've just never bothered with them. No. So I don't know if they're the same dimensions, if they work the same way. I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm going to find out. That'd be quite interesting. Is a CF Express card, is it the same dock? You know, is it the same size? Are CF Express cards the same size as XQD cards? Please, somebody out there, just drop us a message and let us know.
So XQD, I mean, you've held an XQD card, I'm assuming.
I had one. I used it it probably for about a year.
So is that the same shape and size as a compact flash card?
It's just slightly thicker. It's a little bit narrower, maybe. It's not far off. I think it's a little bit narrower.
They're a bit like those old. Oh, I forgot what they were called. Now they were like they were little drives. They were the size of a CF card.
Do
you remember those?
Mean. Yeah, I do
what
remember
those. What were they called?
I can't remember what they were called because I think I had one in the Fuji S2 that I owned.
Yeah, I definitely had one. Years ago. They were like tiny little drives. There's all movement parts in there, wasn't it? So
that's right, yeah.
No, or something.
It was micro drive. Well remembered. So no, but the XQD cards and the CF Express cards, I think they're a little bit narrower, but they're a bit thicker. One thing though, they do work very, very fast. I must say they are very, very good. But I think a lot of people are shocked by the price point of those as well. but I will say actually that if you've got a camera that shoots dual cards, always use both card slots. You know, I came across some students this week actually who had dual card slots, but only had one camera. But we're only using one card.
One card.
I said, you should be backing everything up that you shoot.
Yeah.
That's something for everybody. You know, make sure you use that second card. And I know that if you've got an XQD card or a CF Express card slot, it's going to be blimmin' expensive. But I would liken it like this, okay? That if you don't back up let's just say a XQD card is £100, and you think, I'm not spending £100 and I can go and get an SD card for, I don't know, 15 quid or something. Think about the value of the shots, because if you lose that SD card or it becomes corrupt or you damage the gold contacts or whatever, and you lose all your shots, think to yourself, are those shots on that card, would they have been worth more than the value of an XQD card?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely.
So think about the value of the photos that you're taking and if it justifies the cost of buying that second camera card.
Well, we've always been...
card.
We've always advocated having both cards used in the camera so you can back up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if there are any professionals out there that have dual card slots and they're going out on shoots and shooting with one memory card, then I'd need to bang my head against the brick wall, to be honest with you, because that's just the most, I'm going to say it's the most amateurish thing that you can do as a professional.
Yeah,
sorry,
to be fair to those students, they are amateurs, so you know.
I'm talking about professionals. Photographers.
Yeah,
any professionals out there, and then the most amateurish thing that you can do is to shoot with one card.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going to put it out there. I'm going to put it a bit big, you know. So anyway, Mark, on that note, once we have a price point of those cards, we will put it out. But on that note, let's grab a drink.
Absolutely. Right then. So this is something that I kind of looked and saw on the internet. And it was just talking about what makes photo a photo, really. And the reason I say that is because also we have the rise of AI. Obviously, there was that big story with the Princess of Wales and the photo that was pulled because it was manipulated by the looks of it from different types of photos. I also read about camera phones when taking pictures of the moon. And what these cameras have been doing, they've been taking a picture of the moon, but they've been using AI to add detail to the moon that weren't there originally. So that wasn't actually in the original picture. So did you then take that photo? And there's a whole load of other things that we've seen with AI and what makes a photo actually real, I guess. And we spoke about editing and things like that last week, didn't we? Regarding, and I know you're a big, big supporter of having, you know, shooting in camera, and you said you don't edit that much and all that kind of stuff. Don't make the, you know, the sky
keep it
green
real.
Or yeah, keeping it real. That's what it is. Are we now in a position where keeping it real is getting increasingly more difficult when cameras are doing things that you're not necessarily asking them to do?
Oh, definitely. It is, of course, becoming increasingly because it's there at a touch of a button.
Yeah.
You know, and we all like to, let's talk about phones. We've all got our phones in our hands all day, every day. And when you go into Instagram and you see the filters, something just playing about with them, that type of thing. It's because it's been made so easy, Mark. Mm. It's just there in front of us. It's screaming to be used.
Yeah, absolutely. And having those tools and the kind of trickery that is there automatically now, you know, it's I mean, I suppose we always had auto functions on our cameras, even back in the film days. You had automatic that sorted out your aperture and your shutter speed for you, depending on the lights available. But now it's going into, you know, adding things that weren't there. So it was a couple. I think that the Samsung the Samsung Galaxy phones were particularly mentioned in an article that I was reading, and also I think Google have this sort of space zoom function on theirs, and when you're using that, it does add detail to things. I'm just thinking, how is it now that we cannot believe what documentary photographers are showing us these days? And not necessarily because of posts, but because of the machines doing things themselves, especially when you see things like with Reuters and news in there. It's getting increasingly difficult. Fake news is another reason why this is even more dangerous than maybe people are thinking about.
That's right, yeah. And if an image is published somewhere, do you think maybe in the future there should be maybe a tiny little dot somewhere, a tiny little star in every single image that's released, wherever it is, that's had, say, AI, whether any part of that image has been produced by AI? Okay, just so everyone knows, it just becomes a standard. Bottom right-hand corner, a tiny little white star or something that just indicates that this has had AI to it. It's not quite real. Now, It does make it difficult. Now, there's a difference between that, what I'm saying is marking it for AI and marking it for image editing, because image editing has always happened from the first photo that was ever taken. Okay, there's always going to, you know, you process your negatives. You know, you could push process negatives. So in other words, you're already starting to edit your images. You're going to print your negatives, and then you would print the negatives in the way, say black and white. You change the contrast, your different contrast of papers, color. You change the color and the contrast of an image. So you're always editing. So putting a little mark to say an image has been edited is very different to saying an image has got AI to it.
Okay. Well, suppose there's a third, there's an in-between, isn't there? There's edited, there's manipulated, and then AI, I guess.
Yeah. Now, going back to something that I sort of advocate is keeping it real. I, 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 when I say keep it real, I'm certainly good and open-minded completely with experimentation and finding out what can be done and where technology's got to, because, you know, as photographers, we're all a little bit geeky. We love all, you know, we love all those things. So I am very interested in seeing what AI does, what can we do with filters on Instagram and all of that, because it's just part of the fun thing, you know, and I don't have a problem with that. It's just that I think where, you know, how far we take it when we publish images, I guess, is more the thing. When you see images in papers, magazines, ads, I think that's where I think that that certain things can be sort of where we have to keep things just that little bit more real. Does it make it more creative? You know, as you know, is it art? You know, that's another thing. Of course, it's making it more creative, because we can now with AI, we can think of something in our minds. And we could probably replicate that in picture form.
Yeah, I mean, again, this what AI is doing, and I think again we mentioned this last week, didn't we? I mentioned it with the Instagram filters that, you know, this sort of thing's been around for ages. It's just it's becoming easier to do. It's becoming more accessible to do to, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Joe Public. You know, it's not the sort of thing that only professionals can now use. And I think that does make things increasingly more difficult. I think there should be a way of knowing if things are, I don't know, manipulated, edited in a certain way, especially when it comes to news, which is why I thought it was so important that the Kate Middleton picture got pulled, because it was a fake picture. And I know there's difference of opinion of it. You know, was it, you know, did the media overblow it? And they probably did to an extent. There's a lot of people, it's the royal family, it's always going to get overblown. But the fact of the matter is, it was a picture of, hey, everything's okay here, when it wasn't. And actually putting that stuff out in the media, that's fake news, I'm afraid. And it's dangerous. And I didn't agree with all the flack Princess of Wales was getting at the time, especially considering now what we know. But nevertheless, it was a dangerous thing to do. And you suddenly start questioning, well, hang on a minute, what other pictures of the palace sort of released that might not be accurate? And they've been in the news quite a bit. And that's not just the palace, it's anything, you know, it's anything to do with politics, anything to do with governments, anything to do with on the international stage, what's going on with Gaza. I mean, I know someone who doesn't believe that the war in Ukraine is real.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And the only reason why people start believing such conspiracy theories is because of fake news that's out there. You have to double guess things. So that's why I think things, you really need to start looking into things with a real critical eye. And that's why I thought, you know, it was a bit of a bad move on the Princess of Wales picture, really, because that adds to that fake newsery.
And that is a good way of putting it, because I was just sort of, I dismissed it. I just thought, well, so it's had a bit of editing, who cares? Every image has a bit of editing, you know. But yeah, when you look at it like that, I guess that there was a response. She probably had more of a responsibility than anybody else to keep it real in that situation. Yeah. So,
I mean, I've swapped faces so many times professionally, you know, for family photographs, but that's not newsworthy. And I think that's where the line is drawn.
That's it. And coming back to AI, at the end of the day, we talk about AI, but it is down to humans, really, because we can still adjust the algorithms that AI produces. You know, we're the ones that are inputting all of that information in. So we do have some control over it. We are blaming it too much on, oh, it's AI. It's not real. It's not real. It's humans that we're the ones that are responsible for not making it real. You know, and.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's
which has always been the case. Always been the case, though, hasn't it? With photography technology.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. So I guess it's a case of feel free to experiment, as far as I'm concerned. See what it can do and everything, but just enjoy the experimentation type of it, but don't let it replicate what is actually real, what should be kept real, particularly if it's newsworthy. That's what I think, you know. And like, if I was to go to a photography exhibition, I'd like to know that what I'm going to see involves a lot of AI or it involves a lot of editing, or whether I'm going to an exhibition that is actually real. It'd be interesting to see what places like the National Portrait Gallery in London, how they incorporate things like this, because they should embrace it, places like that, because it's, you know, it's moving forward. We went from, you know, we went from glass plates to negatives to, you know, transparencies to the digital image to the AI image. It's all progression. It is all progression. So embrace it, but embrace it with honesty, respect, and some sort of social responsibility, I would say.
It's interesting because also questioning what you know, it's kind of moving on what our perceptions are of an image, of a photograph. I mean, just to put it into another context, I think we went to an exhibition. It was a couple of years ago now, wasn't it, Cam? And it was a friend of ours and who sadly died. And he took a lot of pictures of planes and things, and his widow was selling the pictures off, which was a lovely thing. But I think it was his son, wasn't it, was there. And he'd actually was selling pictures that were taken from a video game.
That's right, yeah. Remarkable pictures as well.
Remarkable pictures. But and they've been sold. And I've got video games where you could take a picture of anything. There's camera mode on this video game, right? And everything you can do, you can take a picture of. So I'm on some planet on some sci-fi game and I've taken a picture of it. Now, it's not real. None of it is real. It's all manufactured. It's not really a photo. It's just the game taking a still of another part of the game. I mean, it's incredible. But yet, there is, I mean, it's not the first time I've heard about this, that people are, you know, they take a picture within a game, it suddenly becomes their work. I mean, does it become their work? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing because everyone's going to have a different opinion on this, aren't they?
Yeah.
And there isn't a, well, it's right or wrong. It's everyone's opinions. And are we looking at something that, how real is it? Mm. How real is what we're actually looking at, you know? And that's where the concern is. And that's where we need to be careful. And, but the more you look at things now, I know with AI, you can sort of say, you can type in, create me a photo of, you know, like a cat up in the sky or something.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes up with these weird, wonderful things based very much on paintings. But I'd like to see where a lot of the images aren't quite real at the moment, are they? They're very art based, shall we say? So we know that they're clearly faked. Okay. Well, those are obvious. But where is a picture where it's going to get to the point where we're not going to be able to tell? I'll be able to type anything in it or give me a picture and that picture will not be real at all.
Well, yeah. I mean, I saw something on telly. I think it was last week. It was a news report about they basically put up these three pictures of these Miss World contestants, right? Mm. I think it was Miss World or it was some sort of competition like that. And the question was, what do you think about, you know, these women? And they're all, you know, stereotypically gorgeous. You know what I mean? That was what they were. If you think about what, you know, I mean, yeah, it's society's idea what beauty is. And it turned out they were all AI generated, all three of them. All three of these pictures were AI generated. And there's going to be a competition, like a Miss World competition, but all the entries are going to be AI.
Do you know what? I'd actually find that quite interesting. I mean, just to watch, just for the hell of it. Just for the hell of it, you know.
It's kind of crazy, right? You know, and again, that's also quite a disturbing thing, I thought, because it's one person's idea of what makes a beautiful woman. I mean, this happened to be a Miss World. You could do this about fellas as well. What makes a handsome guy? But there's just some, you know, everyone's different and it's kind of almost force feeding you. This is what you should find attractive. This is what you should find beautiful. And
The worry there is that there are going to be people that are going to watch that and think these people are real, or they'll know that it's AI, but they'll be so convinced mentally. They'll think, I want to look like that. That's what I want to look like. And that's where and you see, I was just saying, I would watch that just purely out of, a tech geek type of thing. However, then at the same time, should it be allowed? Because is it socially responsible?
Well, this is my question.
It wouldn't be socially responsible to do it, because there are going to be millions of people that are going to watch it, and they will feel under pressure to look like that. That's what they'll do.
And it's a benchmark. People will be putting up normal women for, and in this case, and they'll be sort of holding these AI women as a benchmark of some description, and it's unobtainable. It's unobtainable because they're not real, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's right. And then somebody will come out and say, okay, well, we're going to, this is an AI Miss World for overweight women or something, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trying to be respectful here. Yeah. You know, if anyone says anything, okay?
Or overweight blokes, shall we say.
Let's say overweight blokes. Let's balance it out, okay? There'll be a Mr. World, Overweight World, you know, see what I mean? Because they're going to be saying, oh, no, well, we're being socially responsible. We're taking everyone into consideration, okay? And they're almost saying that, you know, and then by doing that, they're almost sort of saying, well, being overweight is actually good, right? Where, you know, it, from a health point of view and from longevity, it's not good, right? So, but it's to balance it. They're trying to balance it out, but they're also being socially irresponsible as well. So I think you speak to different people, we're all going to have different opinions, you know? Yeah. So,
But it's hard. And the genie's out of the bottle, and AI is only going to go one way. I think it's just up to us to be responsible with it. You know, really look into pictures, make sure before you comment on Twitter, you know, look into it, see what's going on. I've said this before. I think it was a couple of months ago, wasn't it? You know, it's because this stuff is out there. It's up to us now to be responsible with it. Unfortunately, not everyone will be. And unfortunately, some people will use it in ways that is, you know, really unscrupulous. Let's put it that way. That's a long word for me, isn't it? But we just got to be so careful. But then on the flip side, don't lose trust in stuff. You know, the war in Ukraine is going on. there's you know, lots of evidence to back that up. You've just got to be. You just got to question, but question it respectfully, question it right. Do you know what I mean? You don't go too far into conspiracy rabbit hole either.
Exactly, that's right. Yeah, and is this all progress? You know, because for some people it's hard to accept progress. You know, and are we progressing with this? Yes, we are. Yes, we are progressing. But as we were sort of saying, we have to keep it morally and socially acceptable. So. I think it's definitely something that we've all got our own opinions on, and I think it's an ever evolving story as well, because we're always
will be returning to
stuff
this.
Like this. We will be returning to this as well, but it'd be really interesting to see what you guys and everyone else sort of thinks, and even if you don't send us a message or just, you know, or put it out there, just have a think to yourself, you know, because these stories will make you also think as a photographer as well, you know, and what you should be doing. And how far to take things. But good stuff. Okay, Mark, let's wrap it up there.
Yes, absolutely.
Give a shout out to our patrons, Cole Sherville, Amina Zainab,
Rob Percy, and Nick Payne. It's between the two of us, we remember all the names, so it's all good.
That's right, yeah. Guys, thank you for listening.
We do appreciate it, though, guys. Please, just because we're rubbish with names, don't think we don't appreciate it, because we really, really do. So thank you ever so much for your ongoing support.
Exactly. We managed to, you know, in amongst our schedule, which gets busier and busier, we do manage to put this podcast out, and it is difficult, isn't it, Mark, to find the time to do this?
It is.
And there's times when we do really struggle to get it out there, but we want to keep putting content out there, because we know we get really good messages, private messages from you guys saying, you know, we really enjoy listening to you guys. We're a bit of company for you as well. So good stuff. Thank you for listening, guys. And we'll see you next time. Cheers.
Bye for now, guys.